All right, everyone, welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing. We're presented by PPV.com in association with Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports. It's Dan Canobio. It's Chris Algieri coming to you a little later this week. Apologies. We usually have the episode out Sunday or Sunday night. I was flying back from Los Angeles after a week of covering the MMA event over on Netflix with MVP, which was an absolute blast. MMA Dan in full effect, but it's back to boxing, my bread and butter, where I make my dollars. I had some people being like, what are you, an MMA guy now? No, I'll always be a boxing guy, but a fight is a fight. I respect all hand-to-hand combat. So it was a great weekend out there. Chris, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'm recovering here on a Monday of a weekend of being a rare weekend of being actually home. So I'm trying to get myself back into the feeling of a Monday. Normally you like just getting home on Sunday and just roll right into the week. Now it's like kind of lazy. It's kind of lazy this week.
Yeah.
It's a little lazy.
Yeah,
so I'm looking, like trying to wake up.
I'm looking to my right and I see I have two of my pieces of luggage that barely made it through the door. All my shit is everywhere, all over my apartment. Went right to sleep last night. Tried to make some clips. I might have a new best friend, Chris. I don't want you to feel jealous. I might have a new best friend, and his name is Paige Jackson.
Is he going to replace me on the show? Is the writing on the wall? Is it going to be you and Rampage? Like that's going to be the new buddy comedy?
Inside MMA live.
Well, that could be a sister show.
No, man, he was cool. Like he doesn't really know boxing at all. Like he mentioned like Mike. He mentioned like the big names. He said he wants to box. He still wants to figure out who he could box in the heavyweight division. Who's like around his height and his age? I was like, I don't know, man. 47 years old.
He could box Vitor. He should box Vitor. Vitor Belfort. Yeah.
Wow. Didn't Vitor, throw that out there.
Vitor's good. His boxing is really good. He trains at my gym down here in Boca.
He was telling stories throughout the night. It was an unbelievable night. We called the fight. The first six fights of the MMA card, like a watch party, like I had like a booth set up, like traditional, like on play-by-play kind of. He's there. He told hilarious stories and we're just reacting to all the action. And then after that, they wanted us to roam around the arena and just drink and have a good time, which was probably the coolest assignment I've ever had. Like it was amazing. And everyone loves him. He is beloved in the MMA world. I knew he was until I saw it firsthand. Like he hasn't been to a lot of fights. After his career, he kind of like does the whole streaming thing where he's huge there. But, you know, we ran into John Jones, who we hadn't seen in a long time. And since their legendary fight, and that was sick. We ran into Barry Bonds. We ran into Merab, David Spade, which was probably the strangest one. And James Cameron, directed Titanic and Avatar. Yeah, he asked him to put him in one of his movies. That was absolutely hilarious. But he was telling a story like how he went. The Pride days, yeah. Pride fighting
Pride
days.
Sick.
Bro, I'm a little late to the Pride. Like, I know of it. I know how hardcore it was. I know how, like, nostalgic it is. I know how epic it was at the time. But I didn't know that they did 10-minute rounds. Bro, that is absolutely absurd. And he was telling me the story about how he had to fight Wanderlei Silva and Chuck Liddell back-to-back same night.
Yeah, he had a crazy rivalry with Wanderlei. The Axe Murderer. That's Vanderlei's nickname. The Axe Murderer.
Yeah, we ran into him.
Yeah.
That's so sick. I can't believe that the 10-minute stuff. And he was saying how like Dana White, like Liddell was with UFC. And this is before UFC was huge. So UFC allowed for this like unification between the Pride champ and the UFC champ. And Dana was so gung-ho that Chuck Liddell would beat Rampage that they made like a side bet but with the promoters. So he beats Silva. And then he says, like, he just wanted to take the, you know, he wanted to fight the Liddell fight a little more composed. But the promoter said, no, you've got to rumble with him because I have this $250,000 bet.
Wow.
This is a crazy-ass story that he's just randomly telling me during the Ngannou fight. But great weekend. I'm glad that the MMA fans can see a Netflix event because we've had a few of those in boxing. There's the fallout is crazy. Like people think the fight was rigged, like between Rousey and Carano. I'm like, it would be rigged if it went longer.
Yeah, yeah, or if it went the other way. This is. I people are asking me, hey, what's gonna happen to this fight? I'm like, I said it was gonna be under 90 seconds, which it was. It was under 30 seconds, and Gina is gonna armbar her. Like anyone who knows anything about these two fighters knew how this fight was going to happen. So in terms of being rigged, no way.
No, and it wasn't even the fastest fight of the weekend. Did you see Victor Jerk knock out Edwin Castillo in Germany in 5 seconds, first punch of the fight?
The boxing match, yes.
Yes.
That I did see. That was crazy.
What was that?
First punch thrown, first punch landed, fight over.
You want to talk about potential, I don't like to use the word dive. I don't like to use the word rigged in this sport because everyone deserves the respect.
It happens.
But that was a weird looking knockout because the dude braced his fall before he went down.
Yeah, he's not going to get hired for any more acting gigs, I don't think.
James Cameron is not going to stop him at a party. So I did catch up on a lot of the fights over the weekend. Obviously, Keyshawn Davis was the big one this weekend. It was somewhat of a quiet weekend outside of that fight. It was Top Rank's first fight on DAZN. Didn't really feel like a Top Rank event. Like, I don't know what I was expecting. I don't know why I was expecting Joe Tessitore to be there Kriegel and Tim Bradley and have that feel because it's not. It's DAZN. No offense to our friends Todd Grisham, Mannix, and Moore. They are a fantastic trio. But from that aspect, it was just felt like another DAZN card. Just happens to be a new promoter. Bob Arum was there. That was cool to see. I know he had a knee replacement surgery. And he's still there. And he was still there first fight of the night. But Keyshawn Davis defeats Nahir Albright. Pretty wide decision, one-sided decision. The only real drama came when Keyshawn decided he was going to get into MMA and body slam Albright in the seventh round. 2 points taken away from him. A lot of the talk was before the fight where it took him 2 tries to make weight. He did make weight. I saw some stuff like he missed weight. That's not true. He made the weight on the second try, but afterwards talked about how making weight isn't for me, which is just like, what? Like, you're a professional fighter. Like, that's like rule number one besides protect yourselves at all times. I thought he looked pretty dominant, though, and I left me like, I didn't really learn anything. I don't think we were going to learn anything. He wins. He moves on. Hopefully he can get bigger fights because he still is an unbelievable talent.
Yeah, and this fight in particular, so we have to remember, got to put this in context because, yes, the Nahir Albright first fight was a no contest, but before that, it was actually a very tough fight for Keyshawn. It was the only tough fight of his pro career, and Nahir gave him issues, especially down the stretch in that fight, and it was actually a majority decision for Keyshawn. I didn't quite think it was that close, but Nahir was definitely in the first fight. He was not in this fight at all. So we saw, what we learned is that Keyshawn is getting better. And, you know, he Nahir is a very difficult guy to deal with. He's looked really good in his last couple fights. He beat his brother. He got robbed of a win over Martin. But, you know, he got a draw there. But, yeah, I think Keyshawn is still ascending. You know, the guy's a problem. He's also ascending in weight, it seems like, because he's not making 40 now. He hasn't been there very long. So we're going to see him at 47 soon. But I don't know, man. The kid is just wildly talented and seems to still be getting better. And he's a problem, man. He is a real problem. He finishes strong. He comes on like rounds 11 and 12. Like, he's looking to knock you out. Like, that's rare.
Yeah, I love that about him. And that's what I loved in that Jermaine Ortiz fight.
Yep.
Like, we talked about it on the afterwards of that fight. It was like the killer instinct where you're clearly – he was up huge in this fight. Heading into the 11th round, he was up huge.
Even with the deduction, still, he won every round.
Right, and he was up massively against Ortiz, too, heading into the 11th and 12th, and decided that he was going to go for the stoppage, which is how you make headlines and how you separate yourself from the rest. It's like you can coast the last 2 rounds, get your decision win, get your check, go home. He tried to go for the knockout late. I'm looking at the numbers here. He outlanded Albright 47-11 the final 2 rounds. He outlanded him in total 171-61 in the fight. He landed 40% of his power shots. It was just like a one-sided affair. And the only stuff that you can take note of, or the only stuff that's detrimental here for Davis is self-inflicted stuff. Like the weight, yeah, you just said he made the weight, but he had issues. This is a guy that blew past the weight before, lost titles on the scale, whether he did it on purpose or didn't even care about that. And then the body slam, too. Like, he's lucky that it was just 2 points. You know, that could have been a disqualification, many other referees. It was so blatant of a slam. Like, we've seen ones where the guys can pull it off and it doesn't look so much like they get tangled up. But that was like he freaking power slammed him. So, yeah. Like, two things right there are – the only thing I think that can beat Keyshawn Davis is Keyshawn Davis himself.
Yeah, and we've seen that. You know, the mental health issues, you know, the getting popped for the marijuana. But it did seem like once he got rid of the marijuana, he's really been a lot more focused because, like, exactly like you said, you know, his own worst enemy and probably the only thing that can take him down is himself and his own, you know, issues that he has or develops for himself. And, you know, Nahir is a tough guy to deal with, and he's frustrating, and Keyshawn let that get to him a little bit. The way he said about the weight shows you that he's letting even the weight get to him. The kid's a wild guy. He's a wild guy, and part of why he's so good is that, because he's so reactive, and he's reacting on the fly and making things work. He's got he reminds me of like a Terrence Bud Crawford, except Bud was able to control his emotions at all times. He was very, very within himself. And yeah, Bud would get mad, Bud would get frustrated, but he would lock in. Keyshawn seems to get a little frayed around the edges when he gets frustrated. That could be the difference, and that could come back to hurt him later on. It already has hurt him in his career, you know, with the Nahir, first Nahir fight, obviously not doing the right thing outside of the ring, got that win taken off, but also what happened after the fight with Nahir and his brother. You know, that kind of stuff and blowing the weight, like you said, those kind of things can really derail your career, at least slow it down. But even Bob said, he's like, I love this kid. I love the way he talks. I love the way he acts. Like, he's a wild man and he's going to get eyes. And that's the world we live in now.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You have to have a little bit of wildness in you to be a fighter. I'm just curious now because he's not exactly a kid anymore.
No.
He's 27 years old. He's got the one world title. At 135? Where did he win that at? 140 or 135?
35.
Yeah. He got the one title at 135, and now he's at 140 now, and he's already talking about going to 147, where I think there are some good matchups there. I don't necessarily think – like, do you think he could fill out to 147 next? I think he should stay at 140 and try to get a belt first before he looks at 147.
I think he should stay at 40 as well, but I could see him fill out to 47. He's got a good, he's rangy, you know, he's got long arms and a reach. He's not super tall, but, you know, he's got a lot of muscle on him. He's lean, obviously. So I could see him growing into 47, but I would like to see him campaign at 40 a little longer because I think there's good work to be done there. And honestly, he might be able to wipe out the whole division. Like this kid is wildly talented and seems to be head and shoulders above his contemporaries.
He said before the fight that he did not want to fight Nahir Albright straight up. This is not who I wanted to fight. I wanted Oscar Duarte. I was on the phone with Lamont Roach. I wanted Devin Haney. Top Rank insisted that I fight Nahir Albright. So he even also admitted that it was hard for him to get up for this fight. It was hard for him to train for this fight. I say this all the time. Like, on one end, it's refreshing to hear a boxer be very truthful. And on the other end, you're like thinking like, damn, like he's admitting that. He's saying that out loud that he can't get up for a fight.
But that's the wildness about him. You know, like he's
raw.
Raw is a better word. Not wild, raw. You're going to get a genuine response and reaction from him. And I don't think he really even knows what he's going to say some of the times. Like it comes to him and bang, it's come right out of his mouth. There's zero filter, which is refreshing because so many guys are so scripted and media trained. Yep. And they're not giving you anything. You know, they're giving you what they want without giving you anything for real. Us media members have to deal with fighters all the time in that way. Yeah, it is refreshing. It is endearing. It's going to endear the fans to him. And then he goes out and performs the way he performs. It's like, even if he wasn't up for that fight, which maybe that's why the weight was an issue. You know, he didn't train quite the same way. But it doesn't matter. He was dominant against a very capable guy. That just shows you the otherworldly talent.
Yeah, so at 140 for Keyshawn Davis, there's the IBF title eliminator against Lindolfo Delgado, which we thought maybe would go to Oscar Duarte, but it's just been revealed that Oscar Duarte is dealing with a crazy cut behind his ear that he suffered in the Fierro fight. He's going to be out till the end of the year.
What?
So on Boxing Scene, a laceration suffered in the Fierro fight. So Duarte has turned down the Delgado eliminator. I don't think he was taking that route anyway. I think Duarte was going to go the WBC route. I also think Duarte didn't look that good in the Fierro fight anyway. Not that it's going to mess up his status there. I think Keyshawn would have no problems with Oscar Duarte. I like Oscar a lot, but I saw some, we all saw some glaring, flaws against Fierro. Like flaws. That's the word I was looking for. Flaws, like can't cut the ring off and just going to come forward, chase you around. Keyshawn would have no problems with Oscar Duarte, but it would be an interesting fight to see a guy that's going to like come forward, be like a hard punching Oscar Duarte. I still love to watch him fight, but there is that title shot at 140, but it's the IBF. And we know that a lot of fighters try to stay away from the IBF belt because of the next day weight clause. And even when Mannix brought up the IBF title shot to Keyshawn, he kind of like rolled his eyes and was like, he didn't seem interested at all in that eliminator. Because it's not a title shot. It's an eliminator to get to the IBF title. So it's weird with Keyshawn. It's like he's chasing these big names. Like he's got 15 fights, but he's 27 years old. Like it's hard to figure out where he should go next. But I would agree that he should really focus on 140 and just pick up a belt first at 140. Because then you could be like, yeah, listen, if he goes to 147, I could be a 3-division world champ. But I just don't think anything at 147 will materialize just yet. So, and you have this deal with Top Rank. You have DAZN. There's a lot of names that you can make, and there's a lot of fights that you can make at 140. So I think he should do that.
He's going to. He's going to stay at 40 for a bit, and he's going to...
Hire a nutritionist. Hire Chris Algieri.
No, I think if he... I don't think he needs to move up. Like, yeah, he, you said the weight-making thing is not my thing, but he has a vast amateur background. He's
crazy thing.
You know, he's got 17 fights. Now, again, I think he just, you know, just says things as they come to him sometimes. You know, he did say that he wasn't as up for this fight, so maybe if he has a fight where he is motivated, the weight won't be an issue. So there's that. I think 40 is where he should try to campaign and really just try. He potentially could wipe out that whole division, which would be a great move before you move up, like you said, and become a 3-division world champion. But also, yeah. Again, I don't know what's going on up there in his head. He flies by the seat of his pants and decides what he wants to decide.
It's not just what's going on in his head. It's like what's going on, like his career. Like usually we see these fighters and we can figure out, we can kind of plan their career and their next move, and we can see that. But he's different. Mm-hmm. Like he's only has 15 fights, but like I said, he's 27. He got the Olympic pedigree. He's been a champion already. He is somewhat of a big name in the sport already, despite, you know, not really getting in the ring with anyone of note. Like he doesn't have, like, what's his signature win? Like he doesn't have a signature win really. And I stand corrected. I think the Lindolfo Delgado fight would be for the title because the IBF is vacant right now. At 140. It just depends on like.
I don't see anything Lindolfo Delgado could do with Keyshawn. I
mean, that's what I mean. Next fight, make that could be it. Pick up a strap, but yeah. Then you know you have the IBF rehydration clause, and like, have you heard any fighters kind of avoiding it? Is that something that I'm kind of embellishing here? A guy that can't make weight now he has to make weight twice in a weekend.
I don't. I mean, I know we've had some issues with that recently, like, you know, obviously with Hitchens, making his gripes about that. Conor Benn was saying they didn't want to go that route because of the rehydration clause. It's only come really
to... It hinders fighters.
It certainly it does, but I mean, I don't know if that should be enough to stop you from trying to become a world champion. It still matters right to be a world champion. I remember Richard Comey was the IBF world champion at 135, and Richard was huge. He cut a ton of weight. It was really difficult for him to make the weight, and then he still did it. He would make the weight, he'd weigh in the morning of, he would do the IBF thing, and he'd go out there and knock you out. So I don't know. I think guys are being a little bit soft. I don't like it. You know, I'm very against it, but it is what it is. You want to be a world champion. I wouldn't pass up on an opportunity to be a world champion because of a rehydration clause, as dumb as I think it is.
Yeah, but that's you. You're different.
Yeah.
Then
we're in a new generation. It's not just me. It's this generation. It's a generation.
100%.
Yeah.
And if you bring up Richard Comey, who comes from your generation and different, like Richard Comey didn't think he was a star already. Like I have a feeling like Keyshawn kind of thinks he's like one of the top guys in the sport. It's hard. I just don't. It's a hard thing to figure out because I do think he's super talented, but sometimes I think he's putting the cart before the horse here. Like, don't think you're above a title shot. Like, this is the culmination of your career. Like, there's guys who fight their whole careers and don't get come close to a title shot or the politics of the sport. Gary Antoine Russell, WBA champion. I haven't heard his name uttered from Keyshawn.
Yeah, that's a good fight. That's a good fight. Why do we always forget about him? I'm guilty of it too.
Once a year.
Yeah.
Because they're just not active. The PBC fighters are on an island, fighting not on DAZN. Yeah, he's WBC champ. WBA champ, excuse me. WBC's Dalton Smith, and he's got injured, and he's scheduled to fight Alberto Puello. That was supposed to be June 6th.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on with that. WBO is Shakur, who will not be fighting Keyshawn Davis.
Yeah, we're not saying that.
We don't need to get into that because they're friends.
I don't think Shakur is going to stay at 40 anyway. I feel like he's going to go back down to 35.
To fight Lomachenko.
Bingo.
Or a lot of people were saying, Dan, you guys, yeah, you're wrong. Like Loma's going to fight Tank. And we did mention that on the episode. It wasn't our main focus. But I would put Shakur versus Loma way ahead of Tank.
Well, we power ranked it. And yeah, I mean, that was our last choice was the Tank one, but it was still on there. It's possible.
Tank, you can't depend on him. You can't put him at the front of the list. He hasn't fought since March of last year. Like, he was supposed to fight this summer. It was the latest rumor. Oh, Tank's planning a summer return against Pitbull Cruz. And now it's shifted. The rumors have shifted for Tank to return in September or October. And it's not going to be against Lomachenko. At least I don't think. I would gladly – I mean, that would be great. Lomachenko versus Tank would be awesome, especially now. I think it's a way more winnable fight for Loma, and I think it's a more competitive fight than Shakur.
100%, and I think it's a more interesting and entertaining fight. I like the way they match up because Loma is busy and Tank is a sharp shooting power puncher. It's a really nice clash of styles, but also both of them are coming off long layoffs, so kind of levels the playing field there. And then the size is another thing that matters because Gervonta's not a big 35-pounder. Loma's not a big 35-pounder. They're both really 30-pounders. So, yeah, it's probably the best fight of the bunch, honestly. It makes a lot of sense, but I get, like, exactly your point. How reliably can we get Tank into the ring in the foreseeable future?
5%
yes.
For being generous. Guys, I think he will come back, Tank.
I agree.
But I just don't know when and against who. Then there's 147, and there are definitely names out there for Keyshawn Davis. Keyshawn Davis versus Devin Haney at 147. Haney alluded to it on Twitter, said Debo's coming for Keyshawn. That right there, I think, could be a fight because we're in May now, and Haney has nothing on the schedule.
I like that fight a lot. I think that's a really good matchup of two young, hungry guys in their primes. You got to lean on Haney for the experience. Yeah, obviously, his resume is much deeper than Keyshawn's. In terms of physicality, the strength, you got to lean towards Keyshawn. He seems to be more of the puncher and finisher. Devin's not a finisher. He'll outbox you, and he's got respectable power. We saw that in the Brian Dorman fight, but he's not gonna actively hunt you the way that Keyshawn does. But Keyshawn's never fought anyone at that level at this point. Interesting fight. Good
big
fight.
Jump for Keyshawn.
Big jump. Haney's a bigger guy too. He's gonna, but big jump in terms of skills and in terms of level, but also size.
There's also Lewis Crocker, the forgotten about champion in boxing, the IBF welterweight champion. He's with Matchroom.
He got hurt though, right? Because he was supposed to fight.
He was supposed to fight recently.
He was supposed to fight. Liam Power.
Sorry, Lewis, because you are forgotten.
Poor guy.
You're
overlooked.
Off my radar. Because I don't even know if you're injured or not. Lewis Crocker, Paddy Donovan to meet again in historic all-Irish clash. Lewis Crocker versus Liam Power official for IBF. June 24th. You're right, Chris. Lewis Crocker will defend his IBF ultimate title against Liam Power on June 24th in Australia.
In Australia?
That's a
good fight. Mm. That's a good fight. Liam Power's good.
Being May 13th, this was written. That's this year. 2026. Yeah, I don't think he'll go that route either, Keyshawn, if he goes to 147. I think if he goes to 147, the Taney fight is the most like commercially big fight. It's stylistically, it's really interesting. Haney, I don't know what the heck Devin Haney's doing, man. Well, he fought in November, beats Brian Norman, and then obviously had the Ryan Garcia fight not materialize, the Rolly fight not materialize. Rolly hasn't fought since last May. One full year.
Wow.
We're talking about the glamour division of boxing. We're talking about these young stars of the sport, and they're not fighting. Another thing, too, this is not related, but Floyd Schofield, who had one of the most electrifying wins of 2025 when he beat Tevin Farmer in two rounds,
has not fought
since June of last year.
Ay, God, with these guys, man, just wasting the primes. It's
unbelievable.
And we saw it last week too with Angelo Leo. He hasn't fought in a year and is not going to fight for the foreseeable future anyway now because his opponent didn't make weight. These guys are just these champions. These young champions are inactive. It's wild.
That's why Inoue, I mean, should be just celebrated nonstop.
Revered. He is a revered but also, champion. Like,
when you're the money man like Inoue, you can fight four times in 1 year. We saw it with Canelo as well in 2021 when Canelo fought four times in a year. I think a lot of fighters would want to do it, but it's a lot of the times the politics and the business gets in the way.
100%.
Like, Haney should have been fighting this next month or next week against Rolly Romero. If it would have made sense financially, we could have figured out a way to do it. But when you're Niue Inoue, you know, things tend to – mountains move and fights are made.
I was going to say, you have your own orbit and, you know, everyone's moving around you. So you can force the action and take those big dates. It's tough. Like I feel for like a guy like Angel Leo, who's a world champion in a very deep weight class, but there's a lot of red tape in order to get to the ring. And unfortunately, he wasn't even able to get to the ring by no issue of his own.
That's even more frustrating.
Yeah.
Where the fight is made, full training camp, fight week, get there, and the guy doesn't make weight. I can't even imagine that feeling, what that feels like.
Yeah, I had a long talk with CEO of ProBox, Gary Jonas, about how that fight, why it took so long, the purse bid, the losing it to Salida. You know, it was an ugly, ugly mess. And to even get to that point was messy. And then to show up and then that's the issue. Real, real, real bad situation for the young champion, Angelo Leo. It's a shame.
So Keyshawn, I think, should stay at 140. Try to look for that Delgado fight or potentially go for Gary Antoine Russell. Those are good fights you can make at 140. Then go to 147. Look at the lay of the land there. Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney, Rolly Romero. Those are very intriguing fights. That's where he can really make his fortune and make a big-time name. Brian Norman was on the undercard here at 147. Stops Josh Wagner in two rounds. Didn't learn much from this. Just to get back in the ring, look good. Referee did a horrible job in this fight. I don't know what he was doing in there. But Brian Norman wins. Didn't learn much, but also like just happy to see him back. Hopefully he gets on a good schedule here now with Top Rank and DAZN working together, because he's a guy that he can get right back into the mix.
Yeah, another young guy, you know, former champion already, very talented, good puncher. And, he sat down at one of our ProBox TV shows and he said he had news. This was a couple months ago before this fight was fought, actually, obviously. But he, I think he fits really nicely into this current crop of 147ers. And again, he's young. So it's good to get him, see him back. Granted, he had someone in front of him that didn't give much in terms of resistance. But, dude, Brian Norman's back and put him right in the mix with all these guys.
Did you see anything different? He looked a little more like he had athletic. I don't know. It's hard to. I was like trying to find something in these two rounds to talk about, but like, I don't know. He looked like he was moving more. He looked a little more on the balls of his feet,
which he needed because that was a knock on him, was he was a little flat footed. He would get stuck in the mud looking to trade power shots with you and counter you. He's going to need to find that jab, move around a little bit. That was something I think that came up. Someone asked me like, what do you want to see from him moving forward? I'm like, he's got to be a little more mobile and he's got a good jab. He just got to use it not just to set up counter punches, but to actually score and do damage. I don't know if we saw that particularly with this guy. He didn't need it with this guy. So there's that. Nah. But he did look confident. So I think that was important to get back off a loss and bring in confidence, even though you had someone in front of you that you knew basically you were gonna handle. But he got him out in two rounds. he didn't.
Did we, yeah, did
that his guy job. Went to that guy went the distance with Eubank, Harlem Eubank. You know, he went rounds with David Popot from Popot from France. So got him done there. Got him out there in two rounds. That's what you're supposed to do.
One thing Rampage did say about boxing, he's like, he didn't understand like a fight like this, Norman versus Wagner. Like he couldn't fathom like those types of squash fights that aren't going to amount to anything. But I'm like, yeah, you need that though to set up the next one. He's like, he had like the blankest stare. He's like,
he had that too. He fought Howard Eastman, his first fight in the UFC. And there was a.
I would have known that. I would have said it back to him.
And I remember him vividly afterwards in the post fight interview in the cage. He's like, man, I was so nervous about this fight because it was his first UFC fight coming from
Pride.
So like, it was a big deal. It was a huge signing. He was coming over. He didn't go right into a title fight. He didn't go right into fighting Chuck Liddell. He fought Liar. Howard Eastman. Not Howard Eastman. Howard Eastman's the boxer, but he.
He had a soft touch.
Yes, and that's it's funny that he said he didn't know what that is, but yeah, he had that too, buddy.
Dude, he was saying I was asking how he got into streaming because I didn't realize like he's I did realize, but I didn't understand it.
He's one of the top streamers in the world, isn't he?
Unreal, man. He said it changed his life, and he said that because he didn't know what he was going to do after he retired, and he said streaming changed my life.
Marvin Eastman. Sorry, Marvin. Marvin Eastman. Very good fighter, by the way. I'm not knocking nice. Marvin, but he wasn't like a star name that you would expect.
Wasn't like a title fight.
No. Marvin
Eastman. That means. Yeah, but Rampage was saying how streaming changed his life because he didn't know what he wanted to do after he retired. And I was like, yeah, man. I was like, I brought up you. I was like my buddy Chris that I do the show with, like, you step into the media role, you step into something else because you retire. What were you? Were you 40? Or 38 or 39?
38, yeah.
That's crazy to me. Because you're 38. Like, I'm 30, 39. And I'm like, feel like I'm just now starting my media career or just in the middle of it.
My life ended. My career ended.
Yeah, it's weird. It's so weird. Like, because you're technically retired. And when you're a retired athlete, it's like a death almost. Yes. Like, you die.
100% is. That's exactly how I explained it. That version of me is dead. Dead and gone. I'm not that person anymore.
And then you have to recreate yourself. I respect you. I respect what Rampage has done. I respect Perry, who's not retired, but is like recreated himself as a fighter. Boxed Jake Paul, cut by the UFC. Now just beat up Nate Diaz in an extremely bloody fight. That was some nasty shit. Dude, we did Stitch Duran came on the live with us first.
Oh, nice.
So fucking cool.
Love Stitch.
And Rampage's chat, which could be pretty – those are some pretty – crazy people in his chat. Like, he's not really a fight guy, Rampage, anymore. He's just going to parties, talking about Asian women, all sorts of shit. So when it's wild. So when they bring Stitch in, I'm like, oh man, I hope this chat knows who Stitch is and can appreciate this legend. But it was like W's all in the chat. W's Stitch. That this is a legend. This guy's that I can hear listen to his stories all day. He was telling some unbelievable stories about, you know, working in different movies and all the cuts and everything he's done. But he was in Nate's corner for the fight.
And
this is like well early in the night. We had Stitch on the stream. And I was like, oh, man, I hope you come out of this unscathed. I hope you don't even have to do anything in this fight. Holy shit, did he have to do something? Because that was the bloodiest I think Nate's ever looked, right?
Nate's been in some pretty bloody fights. That was bad though. That cut that was high on like
a nerve on
his temple. That thing was gushing, and it was not stemmed at all. And that Stitch is the best in the world at closing cuts. And that thing, I don't know, he hit an artery up there because that thing was pumping.
That's what Stitch said because I saw him after. I said Stitch, he's like, I could nothing I can do here.
Yeah,
because he broke his nose too, and I saw Nate after the fight, like after they cleaned his face up. And it was just like lines, just like gashes all over him, like big time gashes here on the side of his head, the one on the top of his head. That was some nasty stuff.
That's another thing about aging. Your skin doesn't get tougher, especially with the scar tissue. Like, you know, he's been in a lot of tough fights. He's been cut a lot of times. He is 40
years old. The scar tissue kind of like helps though?
No, scar tissue is weaker. It tears easier.
Dumb Dan.
But about the streaming thing, you know who else is talking about doing that as a life after boxing is Regis Progre. Spoke to him a couple weeks ago.
Regis Progarius. He's buying cars like crazy right now. See that?
No, I didn't, but good for him.
A Lamborghini.
Oh, boy.
right after the fight. And then he bought another big-ass SUV yesterday, but then I was looking at the comments. He's starting a business, like a, what is it? The big SUV driving services.
Okay, cool. But that's something we were talking about because he announced his retirement and you know what he's going to do next. And he was talking about this streaming stuff.
He'd be
he's
great
like,
on there.
He's like, I still want to work out. I still want to be in the gym. He's like, I like how Sean Porter goes around and spars people. He's like, I'll just do that and stream it. I'm like, you know what? That's going to work. That's going to work.
It's not that easy, guys. I never knew about streaming. Obviously, I know how popular it is. I know some of the top names. I know when Ryan Garcia does his streams. I know this Aiden Ross guy and when Crawford goes on his stream. I never saw it up close until this week for MVP Fight Week because they wanted to do streams with Kick. That's what they did. Rampage came to the fight house that we had set up. 12-hour streams, bro. 12-hour streams starting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We get to the fight house at 10 a.m., 11 a.m. The cameras are on. The cameras are on when we're in the van on the way. Light on, music on. I'm in a van with 20-year-olds, dude.
Be careful what you say.
Bro, not only be careful what you say, never was I ever thinking more like, Dan, you are too old for something. Like, it's finally caught up to you where, like, you are. I looked around. I was like, I am significantly the oldest guy here. I was like, don't say anything dumb. Don't do anything dumb. Just kind of blend in. Like I said in the last episode, snipe in with a couple jokes, snipe out. But it is a freaking long-ass day where you're looking at the chat. You're like, got to be entertaining. You're like, you don't want to be boring. But a guy like Rampage is like perfect for it because he's so damn funny. And people just love being around him. And people just like love going up to him. People like love messing with him. But him walking around the arena, that was like his thing. Like that was like, holy shit.
Well, he loves the attention, like, obviously. And all those streamers, you need to. If you're gonna be on for 12 hours straight, you gotta love being the center of attention. That's why I can never do that. I'm good.
Yeah, he was acting like he was like annoyed with all the pictures. But I was like, when we got back from walking through the crowd back to the backstage part, I was like, bro, I know that's kind of annoying to get the picture, but you gotta be loving that. Like you were like the crowd was going absolutely berserk for you. He's like, oh yeah, I like it.
Now you could tell he likes it. You could just look at him and as he walks through, like you know the king walking through court. Of course he loves it.
Dude, the Barry Bonds link up was nuts because Rampage had no idea who Barry
Bonds
was.
That was funny. That was very funny.
That like killed me inside because I'm looking at the best baseball player of all time. And I did not think in a million years that I was going to be interacting with Barry Bonds that night. So it totally caught me off guard. And he's like, yeah, man, we hung out in Vegas. And Rip is just like, I don't remember that. I said, did you know who that was? He's like, no. I think he was lying because who doesn't know Barry Bonds?
No, I know. I think he just wasn't putting it together.
Embellishes.
Like, yeah. Come on. It's Barry Bonds, dude. He is such a recognizable figure. Even the way he looks, like you know what Barry Bonds looks like. Barry Bonds, dude. He's like, I don't watch sports, but it's still Barry Bonds. Like,
yeah, Marab came up to him and they're talking about Marab is a notorious ladies' man, and he's giving him tips on like
giving Rampage tips.
Rampage was giving Marab tips on like when you can settle down and balancing bot fighting and interviewing girls with a girlfriend and doing content with. Like Nina drama while you have a girlfriend. It was very, very interesting conversation there. But that's all on camera. There's a guy just standing there, like a kid with a camera, just following us all around. It's like voyeurish. Like I feel like there's a camera on me right now.
Voyeurish is the exact right term.
Filip Hrgović beat Dave Allen in 3 rounds. What the hell was that? We said, like, what was his fight? It looked even more pathetic. More one-sided, like Dave Allen. He looked like a novice versus a world beater. Hrgović is really good.
Yes,
but that fight just never made sense from the jump.
No. I kind of mentioned it. You know why it probably was made was you know Connolly and Eddie Hearn, one of the last deal maybe. One last deal, and Eddie gets his guy paid. And Hrgović gets a win and a stoppage and moves on. So Hrgović is really good. I mean, the way he was thudding those right hands, he's got a killer right hand. The thing is like just thumps. And they didn't really deserve to be in the ring together. But Hrgović gets back. He gets busy. That's something he has plagued him his whole career was not being busy. So he gets a win under his belt. He gets a stoppage. Does it relatively easy. comes out unscathed, put him into a big fight.
The big fight is Moses Itama, because that is what should be next. And that's the positive that came out of this. Hrgović looked like a world beater, looked great, stays active, doesn't get cut, doesn't get hurt. Because Hrgović versus Itama, I'm excited for that. That could be August, early August.
That's a tricky fight, man. That's a tough fight, even for Itama. I mean, Hrgović.
This is the beginning of Itama's ascent now to the next level, is beating a Hrgović, who only has the one loss. Yeah, one loss to Dubois.
Yep.
Who just beat Wardley.
And
that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. That's a big step up for Itama, though. Really big. Like, that's
too much too soon.
You're jumping multiple steps, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think he could win. Itama, I think he's so much faster.
Yeah, the speed is a problem. Hrgović
obviously is really good, powerful, but his thing is that he's a little plodding and he's a little slow and he can be hit. I think Itama will win. I can't wait to see the odds. This is all speculation, but this is where it's lining up. And I wanted to see Itama versus either Hrgović, Bacoli, or Zhang for what's next, because we know he's not getting Wardley. We know he's not getting any of that champions just yet. We know he's not fighting Richard Torres or any of those guys. Hrgović's the best one of the bit. Like, this is what we want from Itama. He's supposed to be the next stud. He's supposed to be the next phenom. All right. Here's Hrgović. Handle him. Sink or swim.
You said it on past shows. They're moving him like he's out of the prospect and he's in a contender, situation. And this would be that. You know, you want to get this guy to a title fight pretty soon? You want to get him to a title fight early next year? Yeah, this is the kind of fight, kind of guy you got to fight. But I don't know. It just makes me a little.
Yeah, I feel you.
It makes me a little. Because I want Itama to be the next thing. I want him to be the next undefeated heavyweight champion of the world. And this is a tough roadblock in the middle.
Frank Warren knows what he's doing.
Yes, he does.
This is his. He's beyond like a blue chip, Itama. This is a guy that you can put you on top for the next 10, 15 years as a promoter. Like, this is AJ again, all over again. Like, you got to think what Frank Warren, what's going through his mind right now. And Queensberry Promotions, the next 10 years of Queensberry, like the heavyweight division could run through Itama, you know, stadium fights, coming to the States, everything. All of that is ahead of them. And, yeah, Hrgović could do something crazy in there and hit. It's heavyweight boxing.
Yeah.
You kidding?
How old is Hrgović?
I think he's 33. 33.
Yeah, he's still. Yeah, still within a dangerous age. It's not like he's old. You know, he hasn't been very active.
Top six in top 10, top six-ish heavyweight, just on the outside of the top names, but powerful nonetheless.
6'6", 82-inch reach, 20-1, 15 knockouts.
When he lost to Dubois, which was only June of 2024, he was the favorite in that fight.
Oh, running away favorite. Yeah.
We were like, all right, dude, this is going to be a Hrgović stoppage. Hrgović's the next boogeyman. He could be the next heavyweight champion. And Dubois was the one out of nowhere coming off of all the losses and being bullied. Remember for the fight week leading into that fight too, Hrgović, who I don't really know his personality at all, but he was jumping on the bandwagon of, all right, I'm going to freaking bully Dubois, I'm going to be an asshole to him. I'm going to say all these crazy things. I'm your father. And then loses. And that was like the beginning of the second half.
It's also how Hrgović lost. He broke. He wilted under the pressure of a guy that he couldn't hurt, because Dubois was eating right hands all night long. And he just kept coming. And Hrgović just, he snapped. He didn't bend, he broke. So that was part of it, like just the way he lost.
Speaking of Dubois, Fabio Wardley has exercised his rematch clause.
Wow.
With him.
Wardley is a warrior, dude. What a stud.
If you think about it, though, like, where is he going to go besides rest or try? He's not like, he just ascended to the top. He became heavyweight champion after basically no amateur career and 20 pro fights. So it's hard to go backwards when you're at that level, because he probably would benefit Wardley from two or three fights where he can get his bearings, like learn a little more training camps, then get into a heavyweight fight. But when you're at the top so quick And the fight was such a success financially, and it was potential fight of the year. Like, now it's starting to make sense. If he heals and everything.
Yeah.
Could we look at a December rematch between Dubois and Wardley?
Listen, I'm not going to be mad about this. That first fight was awesome. I mentioned that I think Wardley is the kind of guy psychologically who's going to recover very well from this. And as long as he recovers physically, mentally,
right,
you know, in his physiology, he never went down. You know, he didn't. He took a lot of damage. His face really took the damage. Didn't wear it well. But if he's healthy and is willing to go back into it, what are you going to do? Wardley, I think this is just the way this guy operates. He's just a savage. This is what Wardley is. The guy's an absolute warrior. He wants to run it back. He thinks he can beat the man. Cool.
Yeah, we're going to watch. I mean,
hell yeah.
I'm going to be excited as hell for a rematch of, because I don't see it being anything other than another banger. Like, unless Wardley changes his approach, which he probably should. I mean, don't. Like we said, the
first he's not gonna thing he's not gonna come out and start swinging again like he did in the first.
He fight. Should jab,
yeah, yeah.
Jab with the jabber. Like Dubois is gonna do exactly what he just did. That was perfect.
Dubois doesn't have to change anything. He just has to
that jab looking. Was insane. Wardley landing that first big shot to open up the fight, I think it was great, but also it was like shit. I'm gonna keep throwing that for the next couple of rounds, and then his gas tank is empty and. Fight turns.
Well, he just had the self-belief. He's like, you know what? Like, oh, you know, listen, Dubois is not hard to hit. This funny. They did an interview and they were power ranking each other, and they asked Wardley about their defense, and it was like, he's like, neither one of us is very good defense. We're both like a 4 out of 10. So he, you know, he knew he could hit the guy, but also he believes in his power. He's like, if I hit you, you're not gonna stand it. And Dubois did. You know, he went down, but he did survive and was able to come back. I don't know. I know. I'd said I'd want to see these guys wait to recover, but if Wardley feels like he's ready, all power to you.
Yeah, it's
brother.
Big business.
All power to you.
Time and time again in boxing, if they have a rematch clause, if it was a really good fight, if it made money, then they're going to try to do it again. Canelo and Billy official.
Nice.
They announced it for September 12th in Riyadh. I like the fight a lot. I think we've both been on record saying that. I just can't. I don't like. Canelo fighting in Saudi Arabia. I feel like
the skull fight was there. He's a guy who is affected by the crowd. And Canelo fights for the people he loves. I will never forget him waving on the crowd.
Peak.
To fight Saunders. Like them getting behind him and then him going out there and busting his ass and stopping him. Like, you got that guy needs an atmosphere. Especially at this stage of your career, when you're a little older, you really need that.
I know, and one of his worst performances came against William Skull, and a lot went into that.
So forgettable.
But a lot went into that, why that happened, and obviously Skull was moving like crazy. Canelo legs aren't the same, but also the fact that it was like 5-6 in the morning in Riyadh, there was no one there, and I think that affected Canelo, who will never admit it, but I 100% think that was one of the factors into why that fight sucked so much. And now we're doing it all over again in Riyadh. It's part of the deal that you're going to get paid $80 million a fight. You're going to fight in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, when this fight should be in Vegas. And it's Canelo's, it's the swan song of Canelo's career. We're at the end.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he's going out almost, we're going to watch. He's going out so quietly, like he's almost anonymously. In the night, literally, in the middle of the night in Saudi Arabia. Like, the last couple of Canelo fights should be in Vegas in front of eyeballs and big-time Mexican crowds. There's nothing better than a Canelo fight week in Vegas. It's so different. Because even last week when I was in Vegas for Benavidez, it was awesome. Crowd was lit. Whole fight week was lit. But there was, like, chatter, like, yeah, this is cool, but it's not a Canelo Mexican fight week.
I tell people even in our own industry – you don't know what Canelo fight weeks are like in Vegas. They are different. The Mexican fans come out on Tuesday, and they're there all week long. Every event is packed. Everyone's in a good mood. Everyone's celebrating. Everyone's excited. Canelo fight weeks in Vegas are different.
Why don't they just move it to Vegas? Like, especially with as much the war is still going on, right?
Yeah, that's another thing. I was like, that's a really dangerous thing to schedule. yeah, it's months away, and you know, you never know what's going to happen with a global conflict, but things don't usually happen very quickly in terms of, you know, like wars and stuff. So
wrap up that war so Canelo
can come to Saudi Arabia.
Come on, guys, what are we doing over there? Let's get a ceasefire. Can we do that? That's it for our episode. We are gearing up for Memorial Day weekend and Alexander Usyk getting into the ring versus Rico Verhoeven. A spectacle that we will all tune in just to see what it looks like. Maybe Verhoeven can land something. Who knows? Maybe he could pull off the unthinkable. Highly doubt it. Hamza Shiraz is on that card.
It's actually a good card.
Richard Torres versus Frank Sanchez.
Good fight.
I'm interested in that.
Good fight.
I think it's Bivol. No, Bivol's fighting May 30th.
Yes.
Different card. Bivol was originally on this card.
It's Catterall. Catterall's fighting Giasov, I think.
Yes.
That's a good fight as well. That's an important fight for welterweight.
Yes. The Gassiev, who's getting passed over time and time again. Yeah, that's really it. So we will head into the rest of the week. Who knows? I mean, maybe I become a streamer. Maybe I stream myself.
Let's get sponsored by Kick.
I think I'm already in.
Nice.
They gave me an account. So
boom. Look at you.
We should try it. We should try it for a fight week. Because I only think it's cool when you're doing something like fun. Like
nobody wants to see you do laundry, you know, telling jokes.
No. No one wants to see us in a van on the way to a house. Even when we're at the fight house, we're all just kind of sitting there. And like, you need an activity. You need an event. The reason why it was so fun when I did the fight night one is because we're at a fight and we're running into personalities. And they gave me the assignment of going backstage at the weigh-in with the camera guy. And I was so happy because I always said, like, I want to bring a cameras with us for on a fight week so they can experience everything that we see on a fight week because it's a thrill, a minute. So that type of stuff. So if me and you live streamed, I think people would tune in to us just walking through Vegas, a weigh-in or something fight week related.
Well, people don't exactly know what fight weeks are about. Like if, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot that goes on. Like we've always joked, like everyone thinks we just have fun on fight weeks, but like it's a lot of work and it's a lot of like hustle bustle. But it's cool and it's fun, and we always say that, and they would get to experience it in that way.
It's hard to do it when you just like take a quick like 1 minute video or you do like a pod. Like the streaming, you see everything.
Everything.
Like everything. You have to really think about what you're gonna do and say next. But who knows? Maybe we get into the streaming world. All right, everyone, have a great week. We'll be back Thursday with our big preview of the Usyk Verhoeven card and whatever other boxing hijinks come our way. Keep your hands up at all times, protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We're out.